Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment. You know, I'm a little nervous today.
Don't be nervous.
Without Zeb here to give me a hard time.
Well, that's why I'm here.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Anytime. Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, next to winning the Civil War and abolishing slavery, building the first transcontinental railroad from Omaha, Nebraska to Sacramento, California was really the greatest achievement of the American people in the 19th century.
It was huge.
Huge. And the next big thing was actually the Panama Canal. Now, to set the stage, I want you folks to picture in your mind, we're going to start at Omaha, Nebraska, and follow the Platte River to Grand Island, to North Platte, to Julesburg, which is in the northeast corner of Colorado, and then up into Nebraska a little ways, and then over into southern Wyoming to Cheyenne, Laramie, Rawlins, Green River. Then they dropped on down into Utah, to Ogden, Corinne, Utah, Kelton, Utah, and that's where Promontory Summit is, where they drove the Golden Spike. Now, the route continued down into northern Nevada through Elko, Battle Mountain, Winnemucca, on down into California, down to Reno, and down into Sacramento. So that's the route. But what we're going to talk about today is the route that from the east to the west.
Okay.
So that's just going to be the Union Pacific. All right. So, of course, obviously, to figure out where they're going to go, you've got to have surveyors.
Yes.
So the surveyors came first, and it was fitting since they enjoyed life in the open more than most men. And they were like the early 19th century mountain men, actually. These guys were adventurous. They were capable of taking care of themselves. They were ready for whatever the wilderness threw at them. And they were out in front of civilization. And, you know, I just imagine they were enjoying the views and the air, the campfire, the game cooked over the fire, the drinking pure water from the rivers and the creeks and the lakes and exploring the country and mapping it. I mean, for the surveyors, this was great. Now, I've got to tell you, Gina, years ago, I floated down the Middle Fork of the Salmon River when I was about 14. And at that time, if we were thirsty, we just took a cup and drank right out of the Middle Fork of the Salmon.
You might not want to do that nowadays.
You may not. You may come home with more than you bargained for.
Right.
Anyway, so, you know, nothing could be done until they had laid out and marked the line. Now, obviously, on flat ground with no trees, the work involved in surveying was pretty easy. But there is precious little terrain on Earth that doesn't have ridges and bumps and ravines and streams and all that. And because a 19th century train could not run up or down an incline of more than 2% or go around a sharp curve, the hills or ridges had to be cut through to keep the tracks close to or at the level. Now, you got to think the ravines, the valleys, the mountains had to be either filled or they had to build a bridge to be strung across them. And in the foothills, not to mention the mountainous country, this was a difficult task. Try to figure out, you know, how this train could not have more than a 2% grade. Now, the surveyors, like I said, they were the first guys to head out and get this done. Now, I'm going to mention two main guys. One guy is a guy by the name of Dodge, Grenville Dodge.
Okay.
And I'm just going to mention he actually was a civil engineer. He distinguished himself as a Civil War general and railroad builder. He served as the chief engineer of the Union Pacific leg. Now remember, this is the eastern leg coming west of the Transcontinental Railroad. Now, Dodge actually was quite a wheeler-dealer businessman, and he actually amassed a pretty huge fortune. And, you know, you got to wonder, okay, he knew where the railroad was going. Maybe he bought up a little land along the railroad,
hedging his bets just a little.
Who knows? But anyway, over his lifetime, Dodge is said to have been associated with the building of more than 10,000 miles of railroad, besides this transcontinental, and on the estimated 60,000 miles he had surveyed, just him with his crew. But along those routes, he also platted and established communities, including Cheyenne, Wyoming, Dodge City, Laramie. But like I say, in 1869, Dodge was the Central Pacific's chief engineer set to drive the final spike at Promontory Point. So anyway, like I say, they had to get out there. They went first, Dodge and a guy named Day. And they were spared the task of laying out the exact line for the graders to follow, but they had to pick kind of a general course that would work. So they had to find passes through the mountains, and they could be reached. That could be reached from the ridges that kept below a 2% grade. They wanted to avoid major lakes and rivers. At stream crossings, they were looking for places that could be bridged without a great deal of difficulty. They hoped to build the cuts and the fills to a minimum. They hoped to avoid major snowstorms that would fill the road and prevent train passage. Now, in open, relatively flat country, they wanted to be next to or near streams, or at a place where water could be dug, since the steam engines required water, obviously, to operate. And as did the workers and the men and the animals, they all needed water. And staying as far away from possible from the Indians was another goal, but staying near buffalo and other animals was desirable. So this was kind of a conflict of interest because the Indians, obviously, they wanted to be where the buffalo and the wild game was also. But most of all, the Central Pacific wanted to find a route that was as straight as possible to the east, while the Union Pacific wanted to go straight west. Well, the surveyors had nearly 2,000 miles to cover over every kind of terrain. And obviously, they had no airplanes to provide them with a view from above. There were no helicopters, no balloons. And for nearly the whole of the route, there were no maps. So they were kind of going at this pretty green. But there was almost nothing to indicate settlements other than, actually, Salt Lake City was the only major stop from east to west. And there were no towns of any size, maybe a few little villages or hamlets. And also, there were no topographical maps. They had nothing to indicate lakes or rivers or the shape of mountains over or around where the railroad would pass. So, in a way, you could really compare these guys to Lewis and Clark and other explorers. They had a general, kind of a vague idea of where they were headed, but it was pretty vague. Well, despite their handicaps, the original surveyors and the ones who followed to mark out the line for the graders actually did a great job. Nearly a full century later, in the 1950s and 60s, when surveyors flying in airplanes and helicopters and equipped with modern implements and maps, when they laid out a line for Interstate 80, they followed almost exactly the route laid out by the original surveyors. So travelers in the 21st century now, as we drive on I-80, were almost on exactly the original tracks laid out by those surveyors. And again, with, you know, very basic instruments. So, but as I mentioned, for the Union Pacific, Grenville Dodge was the first man, and he recommended following the Platte River to the base of the Rocky Mountains. Now, Peter Day was also a surveyor, and he was the second guy, and he kind of had some ideas as well. In fact, Day examined three routes west of Julesburg, Colorado. Now, think of Julesburg, Colorado, right there in the northeast corner. Okay, now the first route followed the valley of Lodgepole Creek coming out of the Black Hills, then went up and over the Black Hills through Cheyenne Pass and down through the Laramie Plains. Now, the second route, now this is a little bit farther north. It followed the North Fork of the Platte River through western Nebraska, went over the Continental Divide, and through a pretty easy crossing called South Pass, then west to Green River into western Wyoming. Now, the third route that followed, it was a more southern route. It followed the South Platte River to Denver and then led up the Rockies to cross the Continental Divide. And obviously, Denver, they would have loved to have that go through Denver. Well, when everything was said and done, they picked the route, the middle route, over Cheyenne Pass, and they eventually called that pass Sherman Hill, and in 1864, President Lincoln approved that route. So the northern route and the southern route were not used. Are you with me, Gina, on that?
I'm with you. Okay. So east and west were used, but not north and south.
Right, yeah. Okay. They stayed pretty much heading straight west. Anyway, so what was needed most of all, at least at first, was a line through the Wasatch Range into the Salt Lake Valley.
Ooh.
And anybody that's gone that way, you know that there's some pretty rough mountains in the Uintas and
yes.
through that area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, accordingly, Day recruited two fine engineers, a a guy by the name of Samuel Reed and another guy, James Evans, to head separate parties to find a passage. Well, in April 25th, 1864, Day wrote to Reed instructing him to run a line from Salt Lake City up to where the Weber River broke through the mountains, then east up the Weber Canyon to Echo Creek, and then on to Wyoming. So he was kind of going from west to east. Now, Day wanted Reed and Evans to examine other routes, but he thought the Weber Echo would be the best, although he admitted it's rugged country, there's not a lot known about it, and it's going to be rough. See, but he included, Day included, he said, as a general rule, it will be safe to sacrifice distance as straight lines to the cost of construction. So, in other words, to go longer on the route was better than trying to go through the mountains where you have to fill in and cut out of the mountains. So it would actually be cheaper, even though they were taking a longer route. Now, this Reed guy, he was one of the two engineers. He headed west in April of 1864, first by train to the end of the track in Iowa, then by stagecoach to Omaha. It was a rough ride. In Omaha, there was a rush of gold seekers trying to get to the latest discoveries in Montana.
Gold!
Hundreds pass through here every day. He said, old men, young men, the lame, the blind, with women and children, all heading west to the promised land, so to speak. Anyway, the stage ride to Salt Lake City was another 13 days.
Holy moly.
And he was so glad to get there. And I'll tell you, Gina, this summer we did a stagecoach ride up in Virginia City, Nevada.
Okay.
And we only went for about an hour.
Rough ride, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of a little bouncy, you know, for 13 days anyway. Anyway, so in Salt Lake, Reed met with Brigham Young, who gave him equipment and 15 men. Now, after training them, Reed headed north to where the Weber River emerged from the Wasatch Range onto the valley. He went up the canyon until he came to a place called Devil's Gate. And he says that after further progress upstream, he came to what they call Echo Creek. Well, he followed it across the mountains to Bear River, north of the Uinta Mountains, and near present-day Evanston, Wyoming, and from there, it was almost a straight shot east to Omaha. Now, if you look on a map, folks, a topographical map, you will see the mountains, and it was quite a feat to figure out a way to get a train through all that. Well, the exploration took Reed 4 months. He never enjoyed work so much. I mean, you know, you've been in the mountains, the brilliance of the air, the warm days, the cold nights, the beauty of the scenery, you know, untouched by humans, basically.
Right. Very beautiful.
Yeah. And the idea that he was the advance agent in transforming this land from nature's wilderness to civilization, I don't know if that's good or bad, but anyway, from August to November, he did more surveying, looking for a route south of the Weber River, then for one leading west from Salt Lake City and another, and finding neither, he returned to Omaha by stage. Well, in picking out the men that they wanted to be in charge of this whole thing, they wanted this guy named Grenville Dodge. Like I say, he was a Civil War vet. He was a civil engineer. Pretty headstrong guy, I guess one way to put it. Anyway, now his main task, actually, before he could even start working on the railroad, was to curb the Indians who had done some damage. And in 1865, the Sioux, the Cheyenne, the Arapaho, they rode into Julesburg, and they killed 15 soldiers and a number of civilians, and they burned every building, and farms along the Platte River were burned to the ground. And remember, it's the Platte River is where the railroad wants to go.
Yes.
Through the along the Platte. So anyway, to meet the Indian threat, Dodge sent out a general order to all the district commanders on the Great Plains to place every mounted man in your command on the South Platte route, repair telegraph lines, and basically try to keep the Indians under control. So anyway, Dodge was still looking for a route over the Black Hills. And in April 1865, the Civil War came to an end, and of course, we know Lincoln was shot and killed, and this was kind of what we would call the Gilded Age was about to begin, but before America could get industrialized, it needed this transportation system.
Yes.
So anyway, the future for the railroads looks especially bright to the west of the Missouri River and east of the Sierra Nevada, where the government owned nearly all the land and would give a lot of it away to the railroads. And of course, they also gave a lot of away to farmers and ranchers, people that wanted to just stake out a claim. So anyway, the surveyors were critical to make this happen, and for the Union Pacific, the general route north on the side of the Platte River had been set. The exact line had not been set. So still, the corporation had surveyors working out in front. Among them was a guy named Arthur Ferguson. And I see we're running out of time. But let me just tell you, this Arthur Ferguson was a 24-year-old young man, and he was along the north side of the Platte River for 150 miles west. And previous surveyors had already marked the line from Omaha to Columbus, but Ferguson's party consisted of 15 men, including assistants, teamsters, cooks. They slept on buffalo robes. They got up early. They traveled all day, pitched their tents. It was really a great camping trip for these guys. But immediately after breakfast of meat, bread, and potatoes and strong coffee, the teams were hitched, and he says, "We were rolling over the plains." And very occasionally, they would see a cabin, a few acres, but some hardy pioneer. And a lot of times, they would only make about a mile or maybe two of survey as they went along, depending on the terrain.
Yep.
And they were along, like say, the Platte River. And on August 2nd, the party reached Columbus, where it camped for 4 days. And as they were going along, the wagons hauling the supplies, they were going ahead while the surveyors were with the wagon carrying their instruments, food, and stakes, started staking it out. Now, as they went along here, and I know we've only got a couple of minutes here left, but keep in mind, these guys were amazing surveyors to be able to set and mark the line for the graders who would come next, the guys that actually had to dig the dirt and fill in. Now, Grenville Dodge was determined that the Union Pacific be built. So in September 1865, he set out to discover a pass over what's called the Black Hills, which is today's Laramie Mountains.
Okay.
Now, he wasn't hopeful because of the short slopes and the height of the hills. So anyway, he was on these hills near present-day Rawlins, Wyoming. So they still weren't exactly sure how to go. Well, about noon, Dodge and his party and a group of Cheyennes discovered each other. Now, the Cheyenne Indians were held at bay by shooting at them occasionally. It was nearly night when his troops saw his smoke signal and came to his relief. Well, in going down the ridge along Cheyenne, by Cheyenne, Wyoming, Dodge said, "We followed this ridge out until I discovered it led down to the plains without a break." He said to his men, "I believe we have found the crossing of the Black Hills." So it was really kind of an accident that he actually found the final
destination
route that
yes.
they couldn't quite take. Now, I got to tell you, folks, if you've never stopped at Promontory Point, where the Golden Spike was driven,
mm-hmm.
between here and Salt Lake City, you got to stop there.
See, I've often thought about it, you know, when on our trips, and I really want to take my son there to go see the Golden Spike, but I have not yet.
In the summertime, you can drive over there. They have two replica train engines that they bring out nose to nose, just like they did in that picture. And they'll bring them out, and they bring them out nose to nose. You can climb on them, you can look at them, and they have a great visitor center there with videos and movies of the Golden Spike and when this happened. And it's definitely worth a stop, folks. So if you're ever heading that way, if you're going from Idaho down, you can get off there at that one stop, Thiokol.
Yes.
Thiokol, head over there. And then when you come out, you can come out over, keep going over, and you can come out at Brigham City.
Okay.
So you're not backtracking. So, folks, if you get a chance,
follow the freeway signs.
Yes. You'll get there.
You will, too.
So that's just a small part of the story of the Transcontinental Railroad.
But yeah, and you really tried to truncate that, because I know that there's a whole bunch more history within that particular story. Of course, Dr. History every Tuesday. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
Dr-History.com on the internet. And for those of you that are driving down the road, you can just go to iTunes and type in Dr. History Podcast or Podcast of the Old West, and we've got about 160 stories on there right
now.
Wow,
look at you getting all technological and stuff.
Yeah.
Podcasting.
Took me a long time.
Well, you're a little bit farther along than I am. I still don't even podcast. Thank you, Dr. History, for coming in. Great story. And what do you have next week?
That remains a mystery at this point.
It's always a
mystery. It always is, yes.
All right. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.